Well, good morning. It is 8:15. This is Galesburg Live, and it is our Ask the Expert Hour here this morning, and we are joined by the Fleet Superintendent for the City of Galesburg, Mr. Myron Miller. Myron, good morning. How are you today?
Just fine, Tom. How are you doing?
Very good. Thanks for coming in with us this morning. As Fleet Superintendent, anything, any piece of equipment in the City of Galesburg that has a motor, has an engine, you and your department, you maintain, you repair, you do everything.
We do, from police and fire, parks, recreation, golf, airport, cemetery, water, street, you name it, we take care of it.
It's kind of funny. It reminds me of a Seinfeld episode when Kramer was sick and he was going to go to a veterinarian, and Jerry asked, why are you going to go to a vet? Well, you know, doctors just work on humans. Vets, they can, in an hour, they got to work on a frog, a lizard, a horse, a dog. It's like, they're really versatile. It's kind of you. You're really versatile.
Yeah.
A weed whacker to a fire truck.
That's exactly right. And everything in between.
Right.
No day is boring at Central Garage.
How, you know, let me ask you, you know, obviously you've been an automotive guy your whole life. I mean, was there lots of studying involved to go like, okay, worked on cars, was like going down to work on a mower or something like that easier? And then, you know, you got the bigger vehicles. I mean, were a lot of study involved with the throughout the years? Or
no? Yeah, yes and no. Mm-hmm. Because the thing that I think, if I were to go back and take a look, Tom, I took a class called Small Engines in high school. I took some auto mechanics at Carl Sandburg College. But I've never touted myself to be an expert mechanic by any stretch of the imagination. I've always been involved with the people side of it. But in doing so, in being able to communicate to people about their automobile, which in most people's cases is their second largest investment behind only their home, I've always felt that it was important to be able to communicate to people what their car needed and why. Well, in order to be able to do that effectively, I've needed to understand the why. And so I've always had the opportunity to be around technicians, mechanics. I prefer to call them technicians because mechanic is somebody that can take a part off and put it back on. A technician is someone that can figure out what the problem is, what's the cause. And so in the process, I've always had the opportunity to work with technicians that were willing to explain to me the why, so that I could accurately communicate that to people involving their automobiles. In the process of doing that, that has probably taught me more than what perhaps I might have learned over a period of a lot of different kind of equipment, or span of a lot of kind of different equipment. I've probably learned more by being willing to listen, to ask questions, and to understand. I'll give you a case in point. Yesterday we were working on a handy van, and it has a large printed circuit board in it, and there was a function of the handy van that was not working correctly. Well, on that particular van, I don't know a tremendous amount about the electronics within that van, but in the process of calling the company that supplied that printed circuit board, I asked the technician, what is it about this? How does it work? So that when I came off the phone, I was able to accurately communicate to the technician, this is what we need to be looking for. This is what might have happened to make this printed circuit board fail. And so in some cases, and I'll be honest, it makes me sound perhaps more intelligent than I am, but it comes from having a genuine desire to understand the why of how something works so that I can explain it to you that may not know as much.
Well, and using that word in particular, technician, you know, in this day and age, especially with cars and trucks have become such complicated pieces of machinery. It's not that an engine wasn't complicated already, but with all the electronics now, you know, like you said, circuit boards and that. I mean, there's no quote unquote grease monkey out there. You got to be a really intelligent person to be able to work and, like you said, diagnose, figure it out, and repair.
I remember back when the Toyota Prius first came out in 2001, and the second generation, which would have hit about 2004, I think. 2003. At that point, that car had 19 processors in it, 19 different computers within the car. Mm-hmm. It had the main issue, which was the PCM, the powertrain control module, but it had 18 different other processors within the car. Well, when you get into that, that's not just taking a bolt out and putting a bolt back in. you then have to get to the point where you have to be able to think like the piece of equipment that you're working on. And that's what separates out guys that, I mean, I've had people come in and apply for jobs as a mechanic before that say, you know what, I overhaul my 350 Chevy engine. Mm-hmm. Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
But that doesn't make a technician. I can overhaul a 350 Chevy engine. It's not that difficult. But being able to...
Well, I wouldn't go that... Not that difficult for you. For me,
But to be able to go into a car that intermittently does not want to shift into third gear at 45 mile an hour when the temperature is 53 degrees and the outside moisture in the air is 76%,
right.
Then you have to start thinking completely differently. It's not taking a part off and putting a part on. And that's one of the reasons that I enjoy coming here to talk to you, is the fact that I hope that there are people in Radioland that have a question that if I don't know the answer, I can find it out, that we can talk about the common sense answers to maintaining your car correctly.
Absolutely.
And I think that's one of the things that, one of the reasons I enjoy coming here. Besides that, you're just a heck of a nice guy.
That's questionable as well. So speaking of that, we will take your calls, 342-9194, if you have a question about maybe something going on in your auto, a knock or ping, as they say, or something else, a squeak, a rattle, something, a grinding, whatever the case may be. We'll try to answer your questions at 342-9194. And normally, I get you in a couple of times a year, we'll talk winter car maintenance, summer car maintenance, because there's different things to do to get your car ready. And you know, here we are, January is almost over and just getting in, because we really, really almost haven't had winter yet. We had that one week before Christmas where we had really cold temperatures. It really hasn't been much winter. So I thought, well, we can still get you in. So let's talk winter in particular. I know there's differences. We've talked a lot about the differences in oil and how much better they are now, and you know that you really don't need to have your car in there every 3,000 miles like you did at one time. But different viscosity for the colder temperatures and the warmer temperatures.
Yeah, and you go back to the days, and we've talked about this before, but it bears repeating. Go back to the days when, I mean, you go really back to when I was young. It was a straight grade oil, 30 weight or a 40 weight or a 20 weight, whatever. And really, there wasn't 20 weight back then. But, and then it went to multi-grade, which the idea behind that was to be able to have an oil that was thin enough in the wintertime to be able to get to the top of the engine like it needed to, and then thicken up once it got warm. And that continues to be the trend. But more of the trend now is to go to a synthetic oil, which does not use a petroleum base at the end. It's built primarily on additives. Of course, they put additives in petroleum-based oil also. But the idea behind the tolerances is in the engines that are built today, the tolerances are so tight, and there are different kind of composite materials that are used in the vehicle. So it's not just cast iron, or it's not just straight aluminum. They're using different kinds of metals so that they can dissipate heat easier, so they can lighten the car, so they can make tolerances closer and still make it so that something doesn't seize up. Well, regardless of how you slice the mustard, it still needs to be lubricated. So the idea behind having the oil to the top part of the engine on a cold start, which is when it bears its most wearing at that point, is to have the correct oil. And it's easy to go back and think, well, if I have a little bit thicker oil, it'll do better under engine heat, and that's not the truth. So staying with the proper viscosity, and there you're seeing more of the 0W20 oil. We've talked about this before. 30 years ago, 0W20 was unheard of. It just simply hadn't even been talked about. In correspondence with that, what happens then is that because they have the ability for the oil to stay stabilized longer because of the additives they put in it, they've been able to stretch the interval out, which reduces the amount of waste oil being produced, reduces the cost ultimately to the consumer, while the vehicle still lasts as long as it used to, and in most cases longer.
With oil, I was talking with somebody the other day, a higher end vehicle, and required, you know, some specific oil that costs way more, and it may have even been part synthetic or something, and you know, the oil change was going to cost like $150. Is that, I mean, does it really matter if it's a, you know, if it's a Lamborghini or Nissan or Chevy, does that into specific engine, does, I mean, if they're made and it's coming from the factory saying, well, this is what we put in it, this is what needs to be in it, is that an absolute requirement?
Well, I would say probably not. Lubrication is lubrication. But you have two mitigating factors. Number one, you have a warranty. So if you want the car to stay under warranty, you probably need to do right. what the manufacturer asks. But in every case, and this goes down, I'll give you this in two different scenarios. Number one, oil. Number two, tire pressure. The manufacturers determine in the manufacturing of that car or in the design of that car, this is what it takes to reach its optimum performance. So some of these oils that are higher in cost, they require that because of the close tolerances of those high-performance engines. So the more that you get into a Lamborghini-style engine or even a performance engine on muscle cars that, you know, I grew up with, the better that you wanted the engine to perform, the tighter the specs had to be, the better it had to be machined. You know, and I always go back to the 350 Chevy, everybody knows that engine. Those things, as long as the bolts were halfway in place, they'd run. You know, they could have loss of compression in one cylinder and still move a vehicle down the road. Today's vehicles won't do that. You lose a cylinder, the performance of the vehicle dramatically drops. Because it's so finely tuned and the precision is there, the machining is so tight, you've got to have the right kind of lubrication. So, yes, I would tell you that the importance of a higher tech engine, having the proper lubrication is there, but it's equally as important in a less expensive vehicle, you know, what we would know as a Chevy or something like that. It's equally important.
But talk about the difference, the synthetics, the synthetic blends. What, I mean, obviously, if the blend, there's still a petroleum-based product in there, I would assume, but the straight synthetics, what is the lubricant? What have they come up with man-made that they're using?
Well, it's I'm not sure that I can answer that accurately, so I'm going to speak very carefully here because I don't want to speak out of turn. But it really is just a blend of additives that take the place. And so it would almost be like using animal fat. It's not animal fat. Please don't anybody take
that
to the bank.
Use that for your French fries.
Yes. But it's just basically taking something that's not crude oil, and it's just a series of like molybdenums and chemicals like that they put together, and it makes a lubrication.
Interesting.
So I'm not sure exactly the process. And that's one thing that I've never learned. And, you know, now that you've laid down the gauntlet, before I come back here again, if you ever have me back again, I'm going to have a good answer for that.
Well, yeah, it's interesting because in some ways, it's kind of surprising that this didn't happen earlier. And maybe it's been around longer than I think, but I suppose also before all the environmental rules and all that and people worrying about greenhouse gases and this type of thing, I suppose nobody thought about, there was no need to even think about having something synthetic.
Absolutely not, because it, you know, if you go back to, first of all, oil's big business, and I'm not here to make some kind of political statement, that's not it at all, but oil's big business. And, you know, for many, many years, you go back to lubrication back in the late 1800s, after crude oil had first been discovered, back then, no one saw any harm with dumping it right back onto the ground. There was no thought process about any kind of an environmental fallout. And back then, oil wasn't refined hardly at all. It was only half a step what it came out of the ground being.
So it came out of the ground, figured it's okay going back in.
Yeah, pretty much. And so it was used on open gears back then, things that weren't protected. And so oil had to be thick. And just as the time went by, when the man named Von Diesel from Germany created the diesel engine, we're back wherever when, it needed a heavier weight oil. You know, back then it was just oil. Mm-hmm. It just takes this to make it lubricate. And so it was pretty easy.
And I guess where big oil has gotten smart, they are the ones manufacturing a lot of the synthetics now
as
well.
They are, and they have to be because they, first of all, have the ability to do the research, to come up with the new types of lubrication that there are. You know, transmission fluid, Tom, if you take transmission fluid, that has come through a metamorphosis over the last 10 years. It's just phenomenal. transmission fluid used to not have the ability to withstand heat like it does now, and to be able to carry away the suspended matter that's in there that needs to be just a transmission material, clutch material, like it does now. So now we have transmission fluid that can go 150,000 miles without needing to be changed. 20 years ago, that was unspoken. You didn't. It would abhor any technician to think 150,000 miles on transmission fluid, you're out of your mind.
Yeah.
Now, you and I have spoken about this before. On coolant, they have extended life coolant.
Right.
You know my opinion on that. I still think it needs to be changed more often than the manufacturer because of the byproduct. There's going to be differing opinions with that out there. But in my years of experience, I've proven that to be what I believe to be true.
Talk more about that coming up. Myron Miller, Fleet Superintendent with the City of Galesburg, joining us this morning here on Galesburg Live. We'll take your calls as well. Take a time out, an update on news is next.
You've no doubt seen...